This baseball season, catch every game at Long Neck Sports Grill. There are three locations in Northern Kentucky, Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. Each one of them very easy to get to. Each one of them has 4K TVs all over the place, and the sound will be on. Plus, no place in Northern Kentucky has better wings, and there's also no more extensive beer selection than the one you'll find at Long Neck's. Long Neck Sports Grill, and by the way, when the weather gets warm, there's nothing like Long Neck's patio. Long Neck Sports Grill, stay late. Come often.
No one covers the Bengals like ESPN 1530, Cincinnati's sports station.
All right, here we go. Good afternoon. I'm Mo Egger. This is ESPN 1530. Thank you for listening. Hope you're having a marvelous Thursday. Today at Great American Ballpark, the Reds and Brewers are in the top of the sixth inning. They had a rain delay. Luis Castillo started. He is still on the mound. Cincinnati leads the game 2-1. They're in the top of the sixth inning. Today's game feels big. Game number 60, a chance to get to 500. I'm stopping short of must win, but today's game just has a big feel to it. And you look at the opportunity if they could hang on to today's lead, have back-to-back series wins over teams in front of them in the National League Central, and then you welcome the woeful Colorado Rockies this weekend at Great American Ballpark. It's a chance to maybe separate themselves a little bit from the 500 mark, which, for my money, before we talk about this team's legitimate contention, division hopes, playoffs, all of that stuff, you got to clear 500 just a little bit. I know that's kind of random. I know it's kind of arbitrary, but still. Just me, that's how I work. So hopefully today they could take a major step toward doing that. Joey Votto has homered today. Jesse Winker has driven in a run with a hit. And the Reds lead that game 2-1 on getaway day for the Brewers. Reds stay at home, obviously. And a chance to win the series. We'll keep you updated throughout the afternoon. We'll give you instant reaction from Great American Ballpark as the Reds wind up their series against Milwaukee. A lot to get to with the Reds a little bit later on. You're going to hear Zach Taylor. You're going to hear Zach Taylor confirm something that most of us already suspected. That coming up in just about 30 minutes. But today, I think today is a good day for college football fans, and it's worth mentioning that this is not a done deal. This is not going to happen in 2021, but the College Football Playoff Working Group is formally recommending expanding the four-team field to 12 teams. This according to a number of reports. I've seen CBSSports.com. I've seen The Athletic's Nicole Auerbach. They are recommending a 12-team model that would invite the top six conference champions and six at-large teams into the field. In this format, the top four conference champions would get byes in the first round, and the other eight teams will have first-round games on the campuses of the next four highest-ranked teams. This still has to be approved by school presidents. This still has to go through a number of bureaucratic layers, and it's not going to happen in 2021. It is worth mentioning, in this format, the UC Bearcats last year are in the expanded college football playoff. The college football playoff, if you're wondering who's the four-person working group or who is in the working group, it consists of SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. It consists of Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlsby. It consists of Mountain West Commissioner Craig Thompson. It also consists of Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick. So they are recommending a 12-team playoff, this according to a number of media reports. There's a lot that I love about this. Primarily, selfishly, it's the door being swung open to the University of Cincinnati playing for a national championship, being invited to the college football playoff, having access to the sport's signature event. Doesn't guarantee they get in, doesn't help them in 2021, certainly doesn't help them in 2020, but it opens the door for a group of five school to get into the college football playoff. If we are doing the top six conference champions, what we're doing then is we're ranking all the conference champions, one through six. First six get in automatically, right? Top four get byes. Most years since the beginning of the college football playoff in 2014, the highest-ranked conference champion from the group of five schools would have been from the American Athletic Conference. Under last year's format, under this format last year, UC and Coastal Carolina both get in. This opens the door possibly even for multiple Group of Five schools to get in. Consider perhaps this scenario. Let's say you got a team. Let's just use the ACC, for example. Let's say it's Clemson. They're undefeated. They play in the conference championship game. They get upended, upset by, I don't know, Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh's 7-5, and they win the conference championship. Chances are they're not going to be ranked in the top six. Maybe you could argue that there's a group of five, a couple of group of five leagues that have conference champions that get ranked ahead of Pitt in this example. So this is a really good day for UC football for 1,000 different reasons. I like this part of it too. The fact that it's 12 incentivizes finishing with an undefeated record. It incentivizes finishing as well as you can, not resting your guys in the conference championship game if you're basically assured making the field as an at-large because we're giving out first-round byes. Here's something else that I like. It's included here in the piece I read from CBS Sports' Dennis Dodd. Top four conference champions would get byes in the first round, and the other eight teams will have first-round games on the campuses of the next four highest-ranked teams. Look, I think it's really cool when the college football playoff championship game is at an awesome venue like, I don't know, Jerry World or the Rose Bowl. But let's face it, most of us can't get to those games. This is a chance to see postseason football and a top 12 matchup for fans who can get to campus, who can get to a campus site. Under this possibility here, it's feasible that Nippert Stadium could host a college football playoff game. Sign me the hell up for that, right? Campus sites, to me, the essence of college football is a partisan crowd on campus, a team playing at home, taking advantage of home field advantage, a great atmosphere. Some of these neutral site games, I'm not sure about how good of an atmosphere they are, man. This gives us a chance for that. That's better television, and it's better for fans. Here, to me, is the most important thing. This eliminates once and for all, forever, eliminates the possibility of a college football team running the table, winning all of its games, and not even having a chance to play for a championship. That happened to UC this year. It's obviously happened to a bunch of schools. We saw Utah in the era of the BCS. We've seen UCF in the era of the college football playoff. A COVID year, a shortened season. We saw it with UC last year. College football is the only sport, where you can win all of your games and not be rewarded with the championship of your sport. Oh, you can win a conference championship. You can win a bowl game. It, to me, has been the one black mark against this sport, which, frankly, there are others. But to me, it's been one of the black marks of this sport for a while. Theoretically, you could win every single game on your schedule. You can beat all comers. You can win your conference championship game. You can win your bowl game. And yet, holding the trophy at the end of the year is somebody whose record has a blemish. Under this format, it is impossible to imagine that a team runs the table, say what you want about its league, say what you want about their strength of schedule, they run their table and they at least don't have a chance to be invited to the college football playoff. Maybe this rubs people the wrong way in places like Tuscaloosa or in Clemson or even Ohio State fans, but look, those programs, chances are still going to emerge with the most championships, right? I mean, let's be honest. If we expanded the field to 12 last year, is there anybody who doesn't think Alabama wins it? Most years, the sport is really, really top-heavy. We've seen there be top-heaviness in the college football playoff semifinals, where, frankly, there haven't been a lot of great games. And usually we get to the championship game, it's the best two teams. And Clemson and Ohio State staged a great game this year, for the Buckeyes at least. And Trevor Lawrence wasn't all that good. But by and large, man, this is still going to be very advantageous for Ohio State and Alabama and Clemson. They're going to have a chance to play for byes. And still in most years, the top two or three or four schools in this sport, there's going to be separation between them and the schools that make up, I don't know, teams number 10, 11, and 12. But at least teams 10, 11, and 12 have a chance. The word here, and I used it yesterday, is access. This is all about access. This is giving people access. This is giving fans at least the belief that they have access to the sport. You could say whatever you want about how college basketball determines its championship. But every fan of every program in the country feels as if their school, their team, has access to the sport's signature event. Of course, the NCAA tournament. Everybody, doesn't matter if you're a UC fan, a Xavier fan, Kentucky, Louisville, Miami, Dayton. It doesn't matter if you root for a school in a league that nobody's ever heard of. Certainly easier for some schools and some leagues than others, but everybody has access to the sport's signature event. This theoretically gives every fan at the beginning of the season, if not necessarily hope that their school can make the college football playoff, at least their fate is going to be determined on the field. Some schools are going to have a more forgiving path than others. But at least everybody is going to go into the season with there being a path. We win all our games, we've got a shot. Now, it's hard to win all your games. This is inclusionary in a sport that has often been exclusionary when it comes to determining not just who wins the championship, but who plays for the championship. So, yes, selfishly, as a UC fan, sign me up. If you're a Bearcat fan, this is a step in the right direction. And, again, it's worth pointing out, it's not set in stone. It's not guaranteed to happen. There are some hoops that have to be jumped through. This is merely a recommendation. But to a degree, we've talked about the possibility or I guess even the likelihood of college football playoff expansion for a while, and rarely has the next series of teams being added to the process included a total of 12. And this does. And it opens the door not just for one group of five school to maybe get in, but perhaps even two. There's lots about this to love. This is great for college football. This is great for college football for a couple of different reasons, which we'll get into. It's also great for UC for a couple of different obvious reasons, which I'll nonetheless mention. Hey, today, now yesterday, we told you that our phones broke. That's the only explanation I can give you. Our phones are broken, and the way it works here, despite the fact that the telephone was invented in 1876, for us to have a working telephone, we don't just call a phone guy. We tried to call Cincinnati Bell, and according to our chief engineer, we were told that Cincinnati Bell has no record of this phone number ever existing. So that's not exactly encouraging. But you know how the corporate world works. Perhaps this is how it works where you live or where you work. To get anything done, maybe it's an IT, you have to call a help desk. So we've had to go through a help desk, and now we are in queue. It's been more than 24 hours to see if the iHeartMedia help desk can restore our phone service. But here's the good news. On the local level, we have some extraordinarily resourceful people working for us. So here's what they've done. They've given us working phones. That's the good news. Now, this isn't necessarily the bad news, but it's just something we're all going to have to work around. We have working phone lines, but our phone lines, well, we've had to borrow from another radio station. This is serious. I'm not joking here. So for today, and God knows I hope for today only, to call the show, you have to call 749-1360. We are borrowing the phone number from the station next door. That's right. 513-749-1360 is the phone number for today's show. So, and Taryn, are we sure this works? Have we tried it? Okay, we haven't tried it? Great. All right, we've been told that if you want to call the show today, do not call 749-1530. You'll get an error message. 513-749-1360 will be the phone number. So, if you want to chime in on the college football playoff and what this means for UC. By the way, an official press release from the college football playoff on the consideration of a 12-team bracket has...
Hey, when you and your buddies are looking for a place to watch baseball this season, how about Long Neck Sports Grill? Each location has 4K TVs all over the place, so you'll never miss a pitch. The menu is so extensive that you can get something different every time you visit, and no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. There are locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood, and when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a spring night on Long Neck's outdoor patio. This baseball season, Long Neck Sports Grill. Stay late. Come often.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Just been released. I'll peruse that during the break. We'll get to that. So, a lot of college football to get to today. By the way, Reds now trail 4-2, bottom of the sixth inning. David Bell pulls Luis Castillo, brings in Lucas Sims, and the bottom drops out. So, Reds have some work to do. We'll keep you up to date on that also. There's something about Zach Taylor. Zach Taylor, when he does press conferences, sometimes kind of boring, which he has a lot of company in that regard in his profession. But I listened to a podcast that he did with Rams coach Sean McVay, and it was great. And you'll love some of what we play for you if you haven't heard it. Zach Taylor talking about Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and a lot of the pre-draft stuff and selecting Chase and what it's been like coaching Joe Burrow. A lot of that stuff we'll have for you coming up at 3:45, 19 minutes after 3. You could also send me a tweet at Mo Egger. 19 after 3, this is ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. 24 after 3, this is ESPN 1530. My name's Mo Egger. If you miss old shows, or I guess if you miss shows, you can listen to them, but once they've become old. Does the website still work, Taryn? Does, like, everything go to hell at once? This morning in here, I guess, Tony Pike, you said we had no internet. Is everything going well here? Is everything all right? We have no internet. The phones are broken. The microphones, you and I are good. We're fine. And the website's working. Okay, so that's good. All right, good stuff. You could listen to shows you may have missed, interviews, and all sorts of past hilarity on the podcast page of ESPN1530.com and also on the iHeartRadio app. By the way, today's phone number, it's worth me repeating. 513-749-1360. It's like when I first started doing this, this radio station was on 1360 AM. We were 1360 Homer, the sports animal. That was the name of the radio station. And then we moved to 1530 Homer, the sports animal. And then it became ESPN 1530, which it's been for, 10, 11, 12 years. So this is sort of a throwback to me, 749-1360, the old 1360 Homer days. It's great. So that's the number we have to use today. Thanks to our friends at Fox Sports 1360 for letting us use their phone number stuff. By the way, really quick, the expansion of the college football playoff, they've released, the college football playoff has released a press release today. In fact, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read it to you. I'll read to you the important parts. A subgroup of college football playoffs management committee today presented a proposal to change the current 4-team format to a 12-team event. The proposal was made to the full CFP management committee and is the first step in a process that will not conclude before this fall. So there's the first thing. This is not going to happen in 2021. Says the members in a statement, quote, "The four-team format has been very popular and is a big success, but it's important that we consider the opportunity for more teams and more student-athletes to participate in the playoff. After reviewing numerous options, we believe this proposal is the best option to increase participation, enhance the regular season, and grow the national excitement of college football." Here is what they would propose. The four highest-ranked conference champions would be seeded 1-4. Each would receive a first-round bye, while teams seeded 5-12 would play each other in the first round of the home field of the highest-ranked team. The team ranked number 5 would host number 12. Team 6 would host number 11, and so forth. Under the proposal, the quarterfinals and semifinals would be played in bowl games. The championship game would continue to be at a neutral site, as under the current format. So, I mean, you would have a thing here where instead of having to win 2 games, if you make the college football playoff, if you're in the top 4, you have to win 3 games. If you're in the top 12, you would have to win 4 games. And how this would work from a calendar perspective, this doesn't say, but this is clearly the direction they're moving in. They do add this. Other elements of the working group's proposal include the following. While the playoff calendar is still to be worked out, broadly, this is their recommendation. First round games would take place on campus sometime during the 2-week period after the conference championship games. Quarterfinals would be played on January 1st or January 2nd when New Year's Day falls on a Sunday. Obviously, they want to avoid going head-to-head with the National Football League. Semifinal and championship game dates are to be determined. Semifinals likely will not be played as a doubleheader. There would not be reseeding. Playoff bracket would follow the rankings with no modifications made to avoid rematches of the teams that have played during the regular season or are from the same conference. So they're not going to go out of their way to say, well, look, for instance, Ohio State played Penn State. Let's say both make it. Well, they played each other. Big deal. We'll put them in again. Or, hey, they're from the same conference. Let's have them avoid each other. They're not going to give that consideration, which is good. The working group's charge did not include deciding which bowls might be a part of the college football playoff in the future. However, the group did recommend that if traditional bowl games host games, teams would be assigned to their traditional bowls for quarterfinal games with priority going to the higher-seeded teams. So there you go. But really quickly on this, and there's obviously a fallout or benefits here for UC, for the program, for UC football, for UC football fans. Please do not scream at me that this hurts bowl games. Like, who cares? I mean, you talk about something that is a relic of a bygone age. Bowl games. I mean, how many non, if unless it's your team playing in it or the playoff games themselves, how many bowl games do you actually pay attention to? How many bowl game winners can you name from last year that aren't, let's say, Georgia winning the Peach Bowl, which you know if you're a UC fan? I love college football. I couldn't tell you. Those bowl games are sometimes fun to have on if you're off between the week of Christmas and New Year's and, hey, there's a football game at 1 in the afternoon, and you pop it on, and maybe you're like me and a pseudo-degenerate gambler, and so you have it on. No one cares. Here's who cares about bowl games. Bowl game directors who have the cushiest jobs in America. In my next career, I would like to be a bowl game director. Other than that, who cares? That can't be the argument. So this is good. And look, I've done a 180 on this, man. I used to be a very, very small playoff guy. Let's keep it to four. Let's keep it exclusive. The reality is this. This needs freshening up. And it's not Alabama's fault and Clemson's fault and maybe less so Ohio State's fault. It's not the fault of these schools, but the reality is for a lot of us, it has gotten kind of stale. The television rankings this year would reflect that. I think it's fun to have some newness. I think it's fun to have the possibility every single year of schools being added to the mix that you typically don't talk about in championship terms. Indiana last year, right? That's the last time anybody cared about Indiana football, but they had this really fun team last season, played a great game against Ohio State, put them in the mix. Maybe they don't win a championship, but their story gets told. They get that shot for a huge national spotlight game. They get the financial benefits that come with it, and it's something new to the mix instead of the same old, and college football has been defined in recent years by some of the same old. We'll get to this, what this might mean for UC coming up in just a bit. By the way, Daniel Vogelbach, who I think is on two teams at the Metro Tournament coming up later this month or later next month, has just hit a two-run homer for the Brewers, who now lead the Reds 6-2. Things have fallen apart quickly. It's 29 away from four. You'll hear Zach Taylor coming up in about 15 minutes on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. I'm going to be really curious to see what the level of meltdown is if the Reds lose this game. And David Bell yanks Luis Castillo. The bullpen has bullpened, and it's 6-2 Milwaukee in the bottom of the seventh inning. That would be your sports update. It's a service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life. KelseyChev.com. By the way, I got to mention this throughout the afternoon. We have a, I don't know why I'm holding this up for Taryn to see, but we have a phone number today that is not the normal phone number because the normal phone number is broken. And just imagine, and you know, granted, most people don't have landline, but if you work in a business, you probably still have a landline, right? And it goes out, and you call Cincinnati Bell. And you get a dude on from Cincinnati Bell, and you go, hey, our phone's not working. Our phone number, it's out of service. Nobody can call. And they say to you, well, actually, There's no record of us ever having that phone number. That happened to us today. That's only mildly disheartening. Should we try this, Taryn? Let's see if the phone works. Is that Mike? Didn't even screen it. I like it. Mike, are you there?
Yeah, first-rate operation there, cowboy.
It doesn't exactly feel big time today. I'm not going to lie to you.
No, I thought maybe you'd move the station to Terre Haute.
It kind of feels like I had a friend who, when we got out of college, he went to go work at a station in Chillicothe. And this is in the late 90s. And he did everything. He did news. He sold commercials. He swept the floor. He did the farm report. He did a little of everything. And I drive up to Chillicothe to go see him and see his digs. And he was literally broadcasting out of a cleared out closet. Like people like joke. And I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. That's kind of how I feel today.
I bet you do. Mm. Yes, and yesterday was equally frustrating, I'm sure.
Yeah. The idea behind doing a talk show is to be able to take phone calls, but at least we can do that this afternoon.
Well, you know, in some ways, I'm sure probably you'd prefer not to take calls because of knuckleheads like myself, but and a lot of talk show hosts don't take calls, do they, Mo, around the country?
You know, everybody has a different philosophy when it comes to phone calls. There are some shows who don't take any. There are some shows who that's what they rely on. I prefer to sprinkle them in. I think it's fun to listen to people have conversations, and so I like phone calls.
Yeah.
But you have to be prepared to do a show without them. And look, there are days where we will do what I think is a decent show, and the phone doesn't ring, and that's okay. And there are days where the phone will ring a lot, and I'm not sure that I did my part to make the phone calls matter to the rest of the audience. So we like getting them, but we don't do the show based on them, and we don't interrupt what we were planning on doing just for the sake of taking phone calls.
Yes, you're an opinionated young man.
I'm not that young anymore, but yes.
No, well, no, you're not. You're right. You're middle-aged. That's the more correct thing.
43. 43 is middle-aged, right?
Absolutely. Right. Yeah, you're in your prime, bro. Hey, you know, the worst talk show I've heard, the sports talk show, is, I don't know if it's the weekend. It might be Saturday when I'm flipping around. You guys aren't on the air. And I get that show that Harrington on and T.J. Houshmandzadeh. The and Claxico Burress, the worst sports talk show I've ever heard in my life.
I'm not qualified to say anything about that show because I have not heard it. But as a general rule, I try to not criticize anybody who does this particular job because I wouldn't want someone doing that to me. I do think there's a bit of a brotherhood to this job, and I also do know how hard it is.
Okay, so I'll stop stirring the pot. My bad. Okay. Okay, I was trying to get a little extra.
No, I haven't. Honestly, there are shows I really like. I have not heard that show. There's a. I'm a sports talk radio nerd. I could sit here for 10 minutes and tell you which ones around the country that I really like.
Yeah, don't.
And
like
the ones I don't like, I just don't listen to. So I'm, you know, it's to me that's enough.
Exactly. Hey, well. As you said many times, the bullpen is imploding.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, David Bell turned things over to Lucas Sims, who's been pretty good recently, and then, you know, that falls apart. And then Sean Doolittle's just not very good. They got him on the cheap for a reason.
Hey, when's the next West Coast trip that they got?
They go to San Diego next weekend.
Oh, boy. And then anybody else out there?
You know, it's funny, they've gone out west already. They've already gone.
No, they did good. Yeah, you're right.
They played San Francisco on the road. They've played the Dodgers on the road. They've gone to Colorado. I to the best of my knowledge, the trip to San Diego, that's it. They go to San Diego next week, and then they do not go across the central time zone between then and the end of the year.
So the Dodgers will play them back here sooner or later.
Dodgers come here in September.
This baseball season, catch every game at Longneck Sports Grill. There are three locations in Northern Kentucky, Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. Each one of them very easy to get to. Each one of them has 4K TVs all over the place, and the sound will be on. Plus, no place in Northern Kentucky has better wings And there's also no more extensive beer selection than the one you'll find at Longnecks. Longnecks Sports Grill. And by the way, when the weather gets warm, there's nothing like Longnecks Patio. Longnecks Sports Grill. Stay late. Come often.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, and they're starting to get their act together, which you knew was going to happen sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Mo, you know what I'm thinking on this NFL season? I've been trying. Of course, I don't study it nearly as intently as you do, but this San Diego Chargers team, what they did with that offensive line, I don't know how good this wide receiver is they got out of Tennessee, but they and Bosa's back. I think that's a dangerous team out. And with Justin Herbert, I think that's a dangerous team out there, don't you?
You know, they are. I wrote about this about a month ago. They're the bizarro Bengals. Because if you look what the Chargers did this, and in some respects they are. If you look what the Chargers did this offseason, they prioritize more than anything else the offensive line. They spent a lot of money in free agency on the offensive line. That was clearly their target this year. They had a poor-performing offensive line. Pro Football Focus last year ranked it as the worst offensive line in football, and they went right to work on it, right? So they with a year-two quarterback, they go into it. They had been crushed for not addressing the offensive line in the draft. They signed Corey Linsley. They signed Matt Filer. They signed Odey Abushi in free agency. Linsley has been one of the best centers in football for a while. Filer was a guy that we talked about being a fallback option for the Bengals if they couldn't get Joe Tooney. And then with the 13th pick, they get Rashawn Slater. And meanwhile, if you look at their wide receivers, you know, Keenan Allen's a nice player, but I think they lack explosiveness. To me, there's going to be a really interesting case study there between what the Chargers did and what the Bengals did. The Bengals certainly didn't ignore the offensive line, but they didn't go as all in on it as the Chargers did. Two teams, both second-year quarterbacks, both a lot of promise. L.A. said, screw it, no matter what, we're spending our money on the offensive line, we're using our first-round draft choice on the offensive line. And the Bengals looked at other means to address the offensive line, spent the money on the defense, and used the first-round pick and a wide receiver. Both approaches could be right, both approaches could be wrong, but if you're looking for the team that did it differently than the Bengals, you look at the Chargers.
Hey, I couldn't have said it better myself, but, you know, remember for years they compared that, I don't know, it was a class of 85, with Marino and Elway.
83.
And was Peyton the other guy?
In 83? Well, you had Jim Kelly, you had Dan Marino, you had
Elway.
Elway. And then also in that, the Todd Blackledge was taken in that draft. But, yeah, it was headlined by Marino, Kelly, and Elway.
And that's what's going to happen down the road with Justin Herbert and Joe and I don't know if there's really anybody else.
Well, we'll see if Tua Tagovailoa can live up to the billing, and we'll see if Jordan Love gets his chance in Green Bay based on what happens with the Aaron Rodgers situation.
What do you think's going to happen on that?
I think Aaron Rodgers is going to play for the Green Bay Packers next year.
I do, too, because otherwise he's not playing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's under contract to play for the Packers, and I find it hard to believe that he's going to sit out at this stage in his career. I think he's going to go back and play for the Packers and probably play great. Mike, thank you as always.
Thank you, pal.
I do think that is one of the more interesting juxtapositions in the NFL. The Chargers, I mean, they allowed Hunter Henry to get away. Hunter Henry's a nice player, but they let the Patriots sign him to a big deal without really making a huge effort. Keenan Allen and Mike Williams are nice players, but there is an explosiveness element that I think you would say is lacking. They went all in on the offensive line. I mean, for about 5 minutes, Corey Linsley was the most expensive player in free agency at his position. Matt Filer was a guy who got pretty good money from the Chargers. This was a team. By the way, we talk about the Bengals' offensive line issues last year. Herbert was sacked 32 times, which is the same as Burrow, but he took more hits than any quarterback in the NFL except for one. No quarterback had a higher percentage of hurries, hits, and sacks. And this is a team. People beat up on the Bengals for not addressing the offensive line. The Chargers spent years not prioritizing the O-line. The Bengals have tried. They've whiffed. You know, jury is still out on Jonah Williams. Billy Price hasn't worked out. Cedric Ogbuehi didn't work out. I think it's one of the more interesting juxtapositions in the NFL. Chargers, second-year quarterback, bad offensive line last year. It was the priority. With the Bengals, offensive line was a priority. And by the way, both could be right. Both teams might end up being set for the short and long term. One doesn't have to be right and one doesn't have to be wrong, but it will be interesting to compare the two moving forward with QBs in their second seasons. 13 away from four. You're going to hear Zach Taylor talk about what the Bengals did prioritize in the draft and Joe Burrow's reaction to it next. Brewers in the eighth inning at Great American Ballpark. I report to you with absolutely no glee. Nine away from four. This is ESPN 1530. There is a really, really good podcast on The Ringer. It's called Flying Coach. It is a podcast co-hosted by L.A. Rams head coach Sean McVay. His co-host is Peter Schrager, who's a part of Good Morning Football on NFL Network, which is a show that I watch almost every single morning. And the crux of the show is basically this. They get on an NFL head coach, and they talk ball, they talk shop, they talk experiences. And so the guest this week was Zach Taylor. And I enjoyed this. And not because I think Zach Taylor's a great coach. I don't know. Jury is really, really out on Zach Taylor. We've all said it's a huge show-me, prove-it season, however you want to put it. But in the settings of press conferences and things like that, he's kind of boring. And that's okay. Most coaches are. He just is. And maybe we'll get a little bit more of his personality if the team starts to win. I've interviewed Zach Taylor three times, once when he was at UC, twice as the coach of the Bengals. And I found him nice and affable and you know, somewhat insightful, but, you know, just not the most entertaining guy. In this setting, he opened up a little bit. It was a good listen. He tells a story of being put in charge of recruiting Peyton Manning to come play for the Miami Dolphins when Zach was coaching in Miami. He talks about his very, very short-lived professional football career, both in the U.S. and in Canada. It's a good listen. He also talks about his worst ever play call. And we'll have a little bit more of that for you a little bit later on. But this is here's the good stuff. Listening to Zach Taylor talk about Joe Burrow, and by now, I don't think you need me to tell you that there's a lot of reasons to be smitten with Joe Burrow. But I do think this is a good anecdote that kind of gives you an idea of the sort of quarterback and leader that the Bengals have playing QB for them. This is Zach Taylor talking about early in Joe Burrow's time in Cincinnati when they were allowed to get on the field last year, Joe Burrow wanting to redo a red zone drill.
Yeah, so the first day we installed the red zone, you know, in training camp, you know, you install it. It's a lot of concepts guys haven't done before, especially coming from college. And so you get out there and it's a lackluster period against the defense just because it's the first time you're really doing it against the group. And he was just disappointed by himself, the offense in general, and asked us, hey, we need to do this again tomorrow or the next day, whenever it was. And so, you know, if that's what he wants to do, we're going to do it to make sure that he feels comfortable in the red zone. And we did it. And it was a much better day. And, you know, it's just, he's got to win. That's his mindset is I got to win. I didn't win that period. So we got to do it again because I got to go win, you know, and that's how he wants to finish the drill. And he's really impressive that way.
Zach Taylor, hit the microphone. Zach Taylor talking about Joe Burrow. Now they obviously go into a Jamar Chase as well. And the criticism of the Bengals after taking Jamar Chase was, see, they don't care about Joe Burrow. They're ignoring the offensive line. They should fold the team. They hate Joe. Joe Burrow should be angry. Well, here is Zach talking about getting Joe Burrow's input on who they took with the fifth overall pick.
I know you thought we should have drafted the lineman, Sean, but we went with the receiver. We went with the guy that scores touchdowns. I'm just kidding.
Yes. Yes.
You texted me 2 years in a row now on your dog. Top five picks in the draft. Usually playmakers.
Hey, I know I didn't need, I know you didn't need my help on those, but you'll thank me later.
Ja'Marr Chase was the pick, and obviously publicly it was Sewell, Chase, Waddle. Da, da, da. What'd you guys see from Chase? And besides him just being a wide receiver and you loving that dynamic position, what'd you see in Chase that made him worthy of the number five overall pick?
Playmaker's the first word he used. And it's not just outside as an X receiver down the field making 50-50 contested plays. This guy's got a great understanding of the nuances of route running. He's patient. He's got really strong hands. His lower body is similar to a running back. I mean, he's 6 feet, 207. And so similar to Cooper Kupp in the sense that he's got unbelievable body control. He's running full speed, but when he judges where the ball's at, he can shut his body down and have that great control now to run after the catch and maximize it. And it's hard to bring him down on first contact, you know, just like Cooper. You know, he usually makes that first guy miss or pulls through the tackle, and then he's got the top end speed to finish it off. I mean, there's countless looky routes, Sean, and all these routes where he makes that first guy miss, and then he takes it 70 for touchdown. So that's just the game-breaking element that's really exciting to add on top of Tyler Boyd, on top of T. Higgins, who's going to have a great second year, and we got a lot of other guys behind him. So I'm just really excited about that group as a whole.
Can I ask if Mr. Burrow comes and knocks on the door or gives you a text at any point and says, hey, I did throw 20 touchdown passes to this cat a couple of, does that even come into play that they had this connection and that, hey, maybe the quarterback would be a little happy to have his guy?
That's not the deciding factor, but that's an element that you got to take into account. You know, it's, hey, we know what the chemistry is going to be. There's not that feeling out process right now where if you take a receiver that played for X school and he and Joe are feeling each other out, hey, I like this route, run this way. They walked in with 2 years of a connection. And they hit the ground running. Joe knows how to speak to him. He knows how to communicate with him. Ja'Marr's the same way. So you've seen that connection just from OTA number one. You already see it right out of the gate. But that wasn't Joe's personality. Come in and say, hey, you got to take this guy. It was me asking the questions. Hey, do you want to play with him? Yeah, I do. What would your excitement level be out of 10? It'd be a 10. Okay, well, that's, I don't really need to add too many other questions here. So it was good.
All right, there's Zach Taylor. And by the way, he talked about something that we spent a lot of time on before the draft. Do you give Joe Burrow a say? And Zach said, well, yeah, we gave him a say, not the say. But clearly he paints a portrait of somebody who was uber, uber excited to be able to throw passes to his former teammate at LSU. A couple minutes away from 4 o'clock. All right, we are moving towards a 12-team college football playoff, which is awesome. It's awesome for UC. It's awesome for college football fans. We'll focus a little bit more on what it might mean for the University of Cincinnati, that and the latest from GABP. All ahead on ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station.
ESPN 1530. The Cincinnati Bengals play here.
All right, here we go. It's 4:06. This is ESPN 1530. Good afternoon. I'm Mo Egger. Thank you so much for joining our show. Reds are trailing 7-2. As soon as it goes final, we'll react to a pretty disappointing afternoon at Great American Ballpark if things continue to go the way they are. More from Zach Taylor with his former boss, Sean McVay, coming up in just a bit. Plus, Brendan and Jones on baseball. And a few other Bengals odds and ends as well. By the way, I got to mention this often today. If you want to call the show, yesterday we did not have working phones. Today we have working phones. It's just not our phone. We are borrowing the phones from Fox Sports 1360. So if you want to call the show today, you have to call 749. 1360. Today is a really good day if you are a University of Cincinnati football fan. The College Football Playoff Working Group, essentially their management committee, has presented a formal proposal to change the format of the College Football Playoff. And frankly, I think for a lot of folks, what they've recommended comes off as a pretty big surprise because it's inclusionary. I have felt all along, and to this degree, it looks like I may have been wrong, which great, but that they were going to do anything they could to be as exclusionary as possible and keep the party to themselves, which is their prerogative. The College Football Playoff is basically a creation of the five power conferences, the American Athletic Conference, for that matter, the MAC, Conference USA, Sun Belt, Mountain West. They're not a part of the College Football Playoff, but by proposing expansion to 12, they're opening up the party to everybody else. If you haven't seen this, it's a 12-team model that would invite the top six conference champions in the College Football Playoff rankings and six at-large teams into the field.
This baseball season, catch every pitch at Long Neck Sports Grill. Each location has 4K TVs, so you never miss a game. The menu is so extensive, you can get something different every time you visit. I love the wings. And no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. Locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. And when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a warm spring night on Long Neck's outdoor patio. Long Neck Sports Grill. This baseball season, stay late, come often.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Top four conference champions get byes in the first round. Other eight teams will have the first round games on the campuses of the next four highest ranked teams. One thing that's interesting about this, Notre Dame's not in a conference. So if the top four seeds in the 12-team college football playoff, if the top four seeds are from the top four highest-ranked conference champions, then Notre Dame, theoretically, has zero chance, and I guess you could say this about BYU as well, no chance of ever being a top four seed. And it's worth mentioning that Notre Dame's AD, Jack Swarbrick, is on the group here that has proposed this. Now, are there going to be written in exceptions for Notre Dame? Is Notre Dame going to join the ACC permanently on football like they were last year? I don't know, but if I'm reading this right, understanding Notre Dame's place in the sports landscape, then they have no chance of ever getting a top four seed in the college football playoff, which strikes me as weird. They theoretically could be the top ranked team in the college football playoff. I bet you that's the caveat they write in. That if Notre Dame's ranked in the top four of the college football playoff rankings, they get a top four seed. It's inconceivable for me to think that Notre Dame wouldn't have a chance to get a top four seed just because they're not affiliated with a conference in football. We will see. But from a UC perspective, just think of what this does, okay? We are entering a season this year because this is not, even if this gets accepted, this is not going to go in place in 2021. The season starts in less than 3 months. But this is a season of massive expectation for UC. We are expecting the Bearcats to be ranked in the top 10, and if not the top 10, the top 15, but there's a lot of people, myself included, who believe the Bearcats will be somewhere around 8, 9, or 10 in the preseason major college football rankings. The hype for this team is going to be unprecedented, more so than the 09 team, more so than last year. They bring back dudes who could be first or second round picks. They have an extraordinarily experienced and accomplished head coach and quarterback combo. They got dudes like MyJ Sanders and Ahmad Gardner and Josh Wiley, players who could have their names called very early in drafts, right? Lot of expectation. They get a couple of major opponents. They go on the road and play a good Big Ten team. They're going to go on the road and play Notre Dame, and yet there is still this feeling that, you know what, even if everything fell right, even if everything went right for this team this year, they're as good as advertised. They hammer everybody in the American Athletic Conference. They go undefeated. They win the conference championship game. They go to Bloomington and win. They go to South Bend and win. They take care of business against Miami and Murray State. They run roughshod over everybody on their schedule. They go 13-0. There is still a fear and perhaps even an expectation that even if they do that, they will be on the outside looking in of the college football playoff. And by the way, that's my expectation. I hate to say that. That I just expect under this current format that UC, or for that matter, Coastal Carolina, or Louisiana, or UCF, or Memphis, or anybody on the outside of the Power Five is going to be given a spot in the college football playoff with the current setup of four teams. If you take the system that has been proposed, and by the way, I think the Bearcats are set up for success, like not just 2021 success. In fact, there is a ranking today. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com, did it. Top 25 based on depth of roster for the next 3 years. Now, obviously, there's going to be dudes who leave the program. Is Evan Prater ready to take over for Desmond Ritter after 2021? Got the Bearcats ranked 13th. That's pretty high cotton, man. That's good company. But you go into this season, and there is this fear, I think, that every Bearcat fan feels. They could do everything. And by the way,
it's going to be really hard for this to happen. They could do everything you could ask a team to do. They can win every single game. And still, on that Sunday morning when the CFP field is announced, they'll be on the outside of the Final Four looking in. With this format, that is not a possibility. With this format that has been proposed, you win every single game, you get a seat at the table. As a Bearcat fan, you could at least go into the season, and let's face it, more years than not, the odds are going to be stacked against you. It might still require you to go undefeated, but you are still going to enter a season like this. Hell, you could enter a season like last year and go, you know what? We could play for a national championship. We could be in the college football playoff. We could be given one of those 12 spots. We could at least be given a shot to show that we belong. How much fun is that as a fan? How much fun? That is, to me, the one thing that most college football fans don't have. And you could expand this beyond UC. You could say this about a lot of Power Five schools. And I say it about, you know, Kentucky and Louisville and Indiana, and it's not to pick on those schools or those fan bases, but the reality is Kentucky football is not playing in the college football playoff under the current format. And Indiana, as good of a season as they had last year, hell, they changed the rules to ensure that they weren't going to get in. And understandably so, in the Big Ten. This has more college football fans starting the season thinking, you know what, at least there's a shot that our team has a chance. But now that is not limited to people who root for schools in the Power Five. This is great. It's great for a lot of other reasons. It perhaps helps with the retainment of coaches. It perhaps helps with the recruiting efforts, which already Luke Fickell is doing a bang-up job. It perhaps, certainly, I would imagine, helps schools like UC financially. But from a fan perspective, it is the annoying thing about this summer. And I hate it, man. As somebody who would cut off a finger to watch UC in the college football playoff, it's the annoying thing about this summer that we have this season in front of us that could be historically good. And it's going to be hard for it to be historically good, but they have that kind of team, they have that kind of potential, they have that kind of schedule. And yet, I find myself getting annoyed when the possibility of them making the college football playoff comes up, because I fear that if they do everything you could ask a team to do, they're still not going to make it. Who wants to throw cold water on excitement before a season even begins? And yet I can't help but do it, because I've seen how this system works. Now we're going to change it. The greatest thing you can have as a sports fan is hope. The greatest thing you can have as a sports fan is the thought in your mind that if all this stuff goes right, our team can win the whole thing. I mean, you could say what you want about how the Cincinnati Bengals are run. You could say what you want about the torturous history of this franchise. But you know what? At the very least, I could look at Joe Burrow and I've seen the Bengals play in a Super Bowl. I've seen that happen. I've experienced it. And I know, look, if they can put together the right team and have the right amount of luck and stay healthy and have certain guys perhaps individually overachieve and they can get to a certain amount of wins, they'll have a seat at the table in the playoffs, and then they got to win games, and I can envision my team playing for a championship. With the added emphasis in recent years to the college football playoff that has rendered much of the rest of the sport sort of useless, it is beyond annoying. It's one thing if you have a team that stinks. When we were entering year one and two of Luke Fickell and simply hoping they could get to six wins, this was not a conversation we were having. But think of it now. Think of what it's like right now. Think of how we would be talking about this team this year. Instead of trying to convince ourselves that, well, maybe, just maybe, if they could do all this stuff, they could finally be the team that cracks the college football playoff. We could go into a season with a team like this and go, you know what? Hell, maybe they don't even have to win every single game. That's the thing. This year, there's no margin for error. Got to go 13-0. Here, there's at least room for a slip-up if you're in a Group of Five league. And still find yourself in the top 12. Maybe less likely in a Group of Five situation than a Power Five situation, but I think you get my point. This, to me, is inclusionary. This, to me, is great. If you're Luke Fickell, not that you're having a hard time recruiting. But, hey, look, you come here now. I mean, we're talking about this possibly going into effect in 2023, which, you know, that's kind of the kid you're recruiting right now, the dude who's going to start his college football career right around then. You can come here. We've already got it cranking. But you know what? Be on a team like this one. Have everything go our way. Get a shot to play for a title. And frankly, that's not been the reality at UC since the formation of the American Athletic Conference. This is great. This is, and I find it hard to believe that there's going to be pushback to this. The amount of money that the college football playoff can make with an expanded field. I can't even wrap my brain around the possible dollar amounts that we're talking about here. It's great for UC. 18 minutes after 4 o'clock. By the way, I just mentioned something about the Bengals that I want to expand on. And it pertains to Joe Burrow. We'll do that next. 23 minutes after 4, this is ESPN 1530, the John Cena music. Trevor Richards on the hill for the Brewers in the bottom of the ninth inning. Reds trying to bounce back from a 5-run deficit, 7-2. This went south quickly because the Reds bullpen. Instant reaction from a Great American Ballpark, including win or lose today, what I think represents an enormous missed opportunity by the Reds. I've hiccuped or burped now like 4 times on the air today. I do not know what's wrong with me. I've, for a week, swore off pop. I'm drinking just water, and yet still just, I don't know what to do. It's not good. I was talking about this with the college football playoff before. The one thing that every fan, I think, wants and needs is hope. It's the beauty of the NFL. The NFL is the most popular sports entity on this planet or on this country. Maybe not this planet, but in this country for a lot of different reasons. But I think primarily is it's great at selling you hope. I mean, it's great. Every July, every August, or right after the draft, inevitably, in every NFL city, there's somebody going, well, you know, because of what they got in the draft, what happened in free agency, or this player comes back, or a divisional opponent had a bunch of player defections, that sort of thing, or there's a new coach, like, there's hope. The greatest thing you can have is hope. In college football, there's a lot of schools who have fans who go into a season with very limited hopes. But then you add to it what the Bengals have this year. This, to me, is the beauty of Joe Burrow. I was thinking about this listening to Zach Taylor talk on the Sean McVay podcast from before. Paul Daner Jr. wrote a piece earlier this week. We talked about it on Tuesday about what history tells us about the likelihood of Joe Burrow making the proverbial second season leap, the year two leap that we've talked so much about, right? And we saw it firsthand with Carson Palmer in 2005, even though he didn't, you know, he was part of the team but didn't play in 2003. We saw it with Carson Palmer. In fact, one of the things I think we were deprived of with the Joe Burrow injury was what we saw from Carson his last 6 or 7 games in 2004, where he went from a guy who was talented but playing pretty pedestrian to a guy who late in the season was leading comebacks and putting up big numbers and gave you a glimpse into what he could be. We didn't get that second half, for the most part, from Joe Burrow because of the injury. But Carson Palmer shows up year two that he played and takes this enormous leap, and the Bengals win 11 games. And that team was very good and had a lot of explosiveness. Didn't have a great defense. Had a lot of questions about that defense coming into the season. The offensive line ended up being very, very good. Previous to that, in 2004, some of those same dudes had Carson Palmer be sacked 13 times through his first 6 games. But the quarterback play took a team that won 8 games the previous year and made him a Super Bowl contender the following season. You go from Carson to a guy who in Andy Dalton we all love. We all like Andy. Andy gets a lot of respect, right? Andy got ripped at times unnecessarily. But with Andy Dalton, we were always kind of talking ourselves into it, right? Always sort of, and we would cling to these like tropes like, oh, he's being more vocal this year. Okay. Or, hey, he threw with Tom House this offseason. All right, yeah. Or, he was really good in 2015, and so we're just going to try to bring back all those guys from 2015. Like, yeah. Or, hey, Zach Taylor's going to, it got to the point where we were just beating our heads against a wall with a quarterback whose upside was very, very limited. And who we knew who, even if he played his best, was still going to have to at times be elevated. The Bengals now have a quarterback who, if he is as good as most of us think he can be, isn't going to need elevating.
Hey, when you and your buddies are looking for a place to watch baseball this season, how about Long Neck Sports Grill? Each location has 4K TVs all over the place, so you'll never miss a pitch. The menu is so extensive that you can get something different every time you visit, and no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. There are locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood, and when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a spring night on Long Neck's outdoor patio. This baseball season, Long Neck Sports Grill. Stay late. Come often.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I remember when the Bengals lost to the Colts in 2014, the playoff game. And Andrew Luck played great that day. And I remember at the time going, look, there to me is kind of the difference. Andy needs elevating. Andrew Luck elevated his team. Andy, that game, they had like Rex Burkhead and Brandon Tate playing wide receiver. It wasn't good. That bunch of guys hurt. Gresham didn't play. Green didn't play. Eifert got hurt game one. Marvin Jones didn't play it all that year. Like, it was nobody. But still, it's like, all right, a really, really good quarterback can elevate the talent around him and at least be competitive. Andy was not, for the most part, capable of doing that. The great thing about having a dude like Joe Burrow that you can envision being a top five or top 10 quarterback, and not like in 3 years, but soon, is it does feel like the sky is the limit. And the sky is the limit for him as a player. Also feels like sky's the limit for the team as a whole. And I'm not saying this is a Super Bowl contender this year, because I think it's hard to go from four wins to whatever you need to get to the Super Bowl and win a championship. But I do think you have somebody who is capable of elevating, somebody who is capable of winning in spite of, somebody that the circumstances surrounding him don't need to be perfect. That's why I always come back to 2015 when things were perfect around Andy, at least for about 12 weeks. And then things stopped being perfect once he got hurt. With Joe Burrow, we don't need perfection. Doesn't mean you shouldn't fill holes or address shortcomings or build depth or make certain areas better. And this roster, there's still some work that has to be done that now can't get done because, well, the offseason is effectively over. The draft has passed us. The major part of free agency has passed us. And then they'll still get some dudes who maybe they could acquire when they get cut. But for the most part, this roster is built. It's done. And now it's, all right, what can Joe Burrow do with this roster and its strengths, which include the wide receiver group and could include the secondary? What can Joe Burrow do despite the circumstances surrounding him not being perfect? The best thing to have in football is almost unlimited hopes, and those are usually attached to the guy you have playing quarterback. For the rest of his prime, no matter what the Kansas City Chiefs are, if you are a Chiefs fan, every single year, you will think your team's got a very good chance of being relevant because of Patrick Mahomes. Say what you want about what the Packers haven't done with Aaron Rodgers, but every single year, if you're a Packers fan, you've gone into the season thinking our team has at least a shot to be relevant because of the dude we've got at QB. That's what Joe Burrow should give you. He's already giving them that in year number two, or at least as we get set for year number two. 20 minutes away from 5 o'clock. Our phone number today, and hopefully for only today, is 513-749-1360. David Bell is going to get ripped today. The Reds have just lost. This is a very tough loss for Cincinnati. We will talk about it in great detail, including reaction from Great American Ballpark, next on ESPN 1530. All right, here we go. Sports updates, a service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life, kelseychev.com. I know there are exactly 102 Reds games remaining, and you don't want to lose your mind about a game in June. That never makes much sense. But I think if you follow the Reds on a day-to-day basis, today, especially after winning last night, today felt big. Today just felt like it carried with it a little bit more weight than an ordinary Thursday afternoon game in June. There was the chance to get back to 500. There was the chance to get back to 500, understanding that the schedule is about to be a little forgiving for this team. The Colorado Rockies are coming here this weekend. They are atrocious. It was a chance to pull within three games of first place. It was a chance to have consecutive series wins against teams in front of you in the National League Central. It felt like it carried with it. You add all of that to the fact that Luis Castillo was pitching today, needed to see a really good outing from him. You add to the fact that the Reds recently haven't been all that good at home coming into today. They had only won three of their previous 11 games at Great American Ballpark. Today's game felt like it had just a little bit more weight. And for a while, things looked really good. Joey Votto got things off to a good start. Hit his 301st career home run. That gave the Reds a 1-0 lead. That tied the game at 1 after Luis Castillo gave up a run in the first inning. My apologies. They took the lead in the middle innings on a Jesse Winker single in the fifth inning. Luis Castillo was good today after hitting a guy to start the game and giving up a run. He got out of trouble in the first inning, or I should say got out of further trouble, retired the last two hitters. That started a string of 11 straight guys that he retired. That took us into a rain delay. Luis came out and resumed on the mound after the rain delay. The Reds got him a run on the Winker single in the fifth inning, and then David Bell made a decision that I think was the right decision. If you have listened to this show for a significant amount of time, I'm a big believer in not necessarily attaching a decision's outcome to the analysis of the decision. So, in the sixth inning, Luis Castillo started the inning by getting a strikeout. He then walked Daniel Vogelbach, who I think is going to be playing at Pleasant Ridge Park tonight in the doubleheader of a beer league softball tournament. But anyway, he walks Vogelbach. He walks Christian Yelich. He then bounces back, but it took him 10 pitches. And he strikes out Avisail Garcia. At that point, Luis Castillo had thrown 96 pitches. His day had been interrupted by a rain delay. He threw whatever amount of tosses he needed to stay loose. And in the sixth inning, he had walked a couple of guys, and then he needed 10 pitches to get the second out. David Bell summoned Lucas Sims. And Lucas Sims, who is one of two reliable arms that this bullpen has, frankly didn't get the job done. He gave up a ground rule double to Willie Adames, and then kind of a bloop hit to left field, which scored a couple of runs. Milwaukee was up 4-2. They added three more runs against this collection of bad relievers the Reds have. Sean Doolittle took the hill. He gave up a home run to Vogelbach. Art Warren came out. He gave up a run. The only guy who did not give up a run on the mound today was Ashton Godot. And the Reds lose the game 7-2. So let's start. David Bell made two decisions. There's two that we could talk about here on top of everything else. There is the decision to take out Luis Castillo. That, to me, was the right decision. It did not work out. That doesn't mean the decision wasn't right. The analogy I always use is, you could talk about attaching the outcome to the analysis of the decision. Well, you could choose to not wear your seatbelt, and you could still make it to where you're going. It doesn't mean that the decision to not wear your seatbelt was the right decision. David Bell lifted a pitcher who had just struggled, if you will, to get through two outs in the sixth inning, including a couple of walks, including getting to a full count on the guy that he struck out, a strikeout that required 10 pitches, 96 tosses, and a rain delay. He took that pitcher out. That was the right decision after 5 2/3 innings. Was it the right decision to bring in Lucas Sims? I will admit to you that I would have preferred to see TJ Antone there. The game felt like it was hanging in the balance. TJ Antone is this team's best pitcher. He's not their best relief pitcher. He's their best pitcher. If I am going to lose this game, my best pitcher's got to take the mound at some point. This game felt big. Remember the 2012 playoffs, Game 3, obviously a more important game than this one. Aroldis Chapman doesn't pitch. One of the reasons why that game was so hard to take is they didn't use their best guy out of the bullpen. I know there's more outs to get. It's only the sixth inning. You've got to get nine more outs after the sixth inning. But you have two on, two outs. It's a one-run game. Chances are you are going to use Lucas Sims elsewhere in the game. In that situation, I would have preferred TJ Anto. Now, it is worth pointing out that certainly over the last couple of weeks, TJ Anto has been markedly better when starting an inning clean. In fact, if you go back to May the 21st, it's only 10 innings or 10 and a third innings. He has actually allowed more than 50% of the inherited runners that he had to deal with to score. Not a huge sample size, but he had allowed, in fact, if you go back to his last outing, which just came on Sunday against St. Louis, he allowed two of the three inherited runners to score. If you go back his previous three innings that he pitched clean, starting with nobody out and nobody on base, he had been absolutely lights out. May the 29th against the Cubs, he inherited three runners, he allowed three to score. May the 21st against Milwaukee, inherited two runners, he allowed one to score. He has been better in situations in which he is starting the inning clean. And Sims was going to pitch at some point. I still would have preferred Antone because that at least guarantees me that my best pitcher is going to pitch at some point with a lot on the line. That was a high-leverage situation. Now, at the same time, there is what I just gave you and the fact that Sims at some point was going to have to pitch. We can debate that. I don't think it's debatable that he did the right thing in taking out Luis Castillo. I think if Luis Castillo gives up a hit there after an inning in which he had labored, and again, 96 pitches might not sound like a lot to you if you watch baseball like it's 1982, but his start had been interrupted by rain. He had just struggled to get through most of that inning. They took him out. I don't blame him for that. I would have preferred Antone to pitch for Sims. I'm not going to crush him for it for two reasons. One, Sims has been pretty reliable. Number two, it would kind of help if there were more than two reliable relief pitchers. Here's the problem, and this is not David Bell's fault. Here's the problem. The problem is we're only going to agree on one guy pitching in that situation. I would have preferred Antone. I see the justification for Sims. But it would be nice if a manager would have more than just one pitcher to use in that situation. But unfortunately, because David Bell has to manage with one arm tied behind his back because ownership didn't give him a bullpen, this is the situation he's left dealing with. What it all adds up to is a tough loss, man. This was, not devastating. It doesn't have to reverberate through the season, but look at what they had working for them this week. They did not have to face arguably Milwaukee's top two starting pitchers. They did not get Corbin Burns in this series. They did not get Brandon Woodruff in this series. They did get a very good start, or at least a good start from Luis Castillo. They got Joey Votto back. Votto hit a home run today, and yet they still lose two out of three. Maybe it doesn't entirely undo what happened this weekend against the Cardinals, but this felt like a big series. Now, on a macro level, you might say, well, look, they went into a stretch, seven games against two teams in front of them in the division. They went 5-2. That is good. At the same time, there just seems to be something about this team's inability. I believe they're now 4-6, and I'll check that. I think they're now 4-6 this year when they have a chance to get above or at, they're 4-7 now when they have a chance to get to 500, I believe is the number. They're 4-7 when they're a game under 500, have a chance to get even. So there's just something about this hump, and maybe it's more mental than anything. But, I mean, to me, if we're really going to consider this team serious contenders, at some point your wins have to outweigh your losses, and that's not the case. Colorado Rockies in for a three-game series starting tomorrow night. You will hear from David Bell and others at Great American Ballpark. 7-2, the final score today at GABP. And Reds lose 2 out of 3. So what do you make of the decision, David Bell taking out Luis Castillo? What do you make of the decision to use Lucas Sims instead of TJ Antone? And isn't a part of the issue here the fact that it's basically in every high leverage situation a debate between two guys? In every high leverage situation, it's essentially, do you want Antone or Sims? Is that model sustainable?
This baseball season, catch every pitch at Longneck Sports Grill. Each location has 4K TVs, so you never miss a game. The menu is so extensive, you can get something different every time you visit. I love the wings. And no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. Locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. And when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a warm spring night on Longneck's outdoor patio. Longneck Sports Grill, this baseball season, stay late, come often.
Our phone number today is a little bit different than usual. Our phones are working. We have to use somebody else's phone number because God knows why. 513-749-1360 is today's phone number. Our phones died. Cincinnati Bell has no idea what happened to our phone number. We're still waiting for help from the corporate help desk. David Bell might have good relief pitches before we get it. But we do have a phone line that works, 749-1360. Is the issue David Bell taking out Luis Castillo? Is the issue David Bell not using TJ Antone? Or is the issue the fact that David Bell, in a situation that is involving any kind of leverage, only has two guys? We'd love to hear from you. You could also chime in on Twitter, at Mo Egger. Reds lose. In addition to all of this, Jesse Winker continues to have a remarkable season. And could very well be considered, through this point of the season, the National League's MVP. He had a go-ahead RBI hit today. And now the Reds have to figure out what to do with him long-term. Shouldn't they have already done that? We'll do that coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. First, Brenneman and Jones on baseball.
No one covers the Bengals like ESPN 1530, Cincinnati's sports station.
All right, here we go. It's 5:03. This is ESPN 1530. Good afternoon. I'm Mo Egger. Thank you so much for listening. We have a lot happening. We're here for another hour. Reds lose 7-2 at Great American Ballpark. Brewers take 2 out of 3. You'll hear from David Bell here in just a second. We will get to your phone calls, including those who have waited patiently. I'll mention this again, and you'll hear me mention it a couple of times. If you were with us yesterday, our phones broke. But we do have phone service today. We're borrowing the phone service of Fox Sports 1360, which means I guess you can't call the Doug Gottlieb show. But if you want to call the show today, 513-749-1360 is the phone number this afternoon. This game pivoted in the sixth inning when David Bell lifted Luis Castillo. With 2 on and 2 outs, he had struck a guy out to start the inning. He had walked Vogelbach and Christian Yelich. He then came back and he took 10 pitches to strike out Avisail Garcia. David Bell at that point went to the bullpen. It had been to that point a 72-pitch afternoon for Luis Castillo. And a good afternoon. Had only given up one hit. The afternoon included a rain delay. Not the longest rain delay ever, but a rain delay nonetheless. David Bell lifted Luis Castillo in favor of Lucas Sims. Lucas Sims proceeded to give up a ground rule double to Willy Adames and then gave up the go-ahead single to Jace Peterson. Let's be honest, it's not like he knocked the cover off the ball. He blooped it to left field. Nonetheless, Lucas Sims got the call. TJ Antone did not. You are going to hear David Bell here in his post-game session with the reporters, and he will explain why TJ Antone was not used. And it's raising eyebrows. It's eliciting questions. And it makes me wonder if a good thing is about to happen to the team as a whole, but it makes me wonder if a really bad thing is about to happen to the bullpen as a whole. Here's David Bell in the aftermath of today's 7-2 loss.
David, the game unraveled there in the sixth inning after Luis had the 10-pitch at bat to get the second out. You went to the bullpen. Can you take us through the decision-making process of going to the 10 there?
Yeah, you know, it kind of started with the delay, you know, and then actually Luis came out and was throwing as well as ever, which was great to see. Because of the delay, I did have Lucas up to start the inning just to see how it went. He was still throwing the ball well. During the 10-pitch at bat, is when I made the decision. I just felt like with the delay, he had to work extra hard to get that strikeout after the couple walks. And yeah, that's why we had Lucas ready. And that was the thought process there with bringing Lucas in.
More times than not in mid-game high leverage situations, you've gone to Antone. Was there any thought to going to him there or warming him up?
TJ was, he was not an option today. So, you know, you know, Lucas has done that for us and will do it a lot moving forward. Did it a lot last year, has done it this year. We'll continue to get that opportunity a lot. But TJ wasn't part of the decision because he wasn't an option today.
I know the loss stings today, but going forward, you had touched on how well Castillo was pitching. I know he had the back-to-back walks in the sixth, which he's frustrated with, but just overall, stepping a few steps in the right direction last couple times out.
Yeah, I mean, it was very similar to his last time out, and both starts looked, you know, just like we've seen over the last couple of years, and we're all really happy for Luis. I mean, he worked hard to get back to this point. It's not always easy to, it's very difficult to get back after you've been struggling. And, you know, he stayed strong. He stayed positive throughout the whole thing. And, you know, he's definitely back throwing the ball really well. So that's a great sign for us moving forward.
Is TJ okay? Is he injured?
If we could, I'd prefer to wait and just talk about TJ tomorrow.
All right, David Bell with the reporters after the game, 7-2, Brewers win. So the Antone thing we have to work through a little bit because there's clearly the possibility that he's hurt. David Bell did not say that he was. He just said he's not available, and he would like to talk about TJ Antone tomorrow. Did not say he was hurt, just said not available. Could unavailability be attributed to injury? Of course. At the same time, Sonny Gray just went on the injured list. The Reds currently have no pitcher listed for Sunday's game, which would be when Sonny Gray is supposed to start. TJ Antone has not appeared in a game since Sunday. So there is the very real possibility, and, you know, David Bell being vague after the game invites this kind of speculation. There's the possibility that TJ Antone's going to move into the starting rotation. If you go back to Sunday, let's see if we can do this. You want 4 days of rest, Sunday's game. He threw six pitches. He also pitched in Saturday's game in which he threw 10 pitches. So Monday, day one of rest, off day. Tuesday, Wednesday, 4 days. Theoretically, he could pitch tomorrow on 4 days rest from his last outing. The Reds, I'm guessing, aren't going to do that. Tyler Mahle is scheduled to pitch his normal turn tomorrow. Wade Miley gets the ball on Saturday in the series finale against the Rockies, right now listed for the Reds is TBD. That could be TJ Antone. And let's face it, this weekend or this week, the Reds played what many of us kind of framed as a pivotal three-game series against the Milwaukee Brewers. Their best pitcher did not appear in any of those games. TJ Antone's value to the team could very well be better explained as him being a starting pitcher. TJ Antone has pitched a whopping four innings this month. As good as he is, when you have a spot in the rotation that is wide open, you got to think about using him in that spot, right? He has started before. What he's done, as good as he's been in the bullpen, he is started four games last year when they needed. So, until we have something a little bit more concrete, you can't help but speculate, given how vague David Bell was, TJ Antone could be starting this weekend against the Rockies. It is worth pointing out, for those who didn't follow his minor league career path, that he was used almost exclusively as a starting pitcher in the minor leagues. In fact, of his 111 minor league appearances, all but two came as a starting pitcher. He started four games last year. And there's Tony Santian, who's been brought up as a possible option. But TJ Antone, there might not be a better pitcher right now under the Reds umbrella than TJ Antone, who was not used at all in this series. Now, then the question becomes, if Sonny Gray's injury is not a long-lasting thing and TJ Antone has success as a starter, then what do you do? I would say that it is a pleasant problem to have. Do you stick with Vladimir Gutierrez? What do you do moving forward? I got to be honest with you. I sort of feel like the Reds can kind of ill afford to worry about what's going to happen 2, 3, 4 weeks from now and just got to figure out a way to get their heads above water, as Nick Kroll might say. So there is that. But the other part of that is this. If you move TJ Antone to the starting rotation, and there's every reason to want to do that, you are now left with exactly one reliable arm in the bullpen. Exactly one arm in the bullpen that I think you feel good about using in a high leverage situation. By the way, that other one guy is Lucas Sims, who today gave up a big hit in a high leverage situation. And yes, Michael Lorenzen is trending toward coming back. That still feels like it's a little ways away. We have seen Amir Garrett get the ball a couple of times this week and has looked a little bit better, I guess. Although, let's face it, last night, gave up a walk and a hit in his two-thirds of an inning. You have one reliable arm in this bullpen. So you're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul here, if you will. Is there every reason to want TJ Antone to start? Sure. He is probably their best pitcher right now. The Reds have an immediate need for a starting pitcher. And whether you want it or not, let's be honest, it just does not feel like Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo are options right now. And maybe with very good reason, lack of experience being chief among them. But if you put TJ Antone in the starting rotation, you do understand what we're doing with the bullpen here. A unit that has been an absolute disaster all season long. And again, this is assuming that he's not hurt. This could be tomorrow they announce TJ Antone goes on the injured list for some reason. It's worth pointing out he has not pitched at all this week. Is that all because of them trying to get him ready to start? I don't know. But if we assume for a second that maybe they're thinking about using him as a starting pitcher, the Reds have had to turn to their bullpen in every game this year. Nobody pitches a complete game anymore. So you need relievers to give you on most nights minimum 6 outs, most nights 9 outs, and sometimes even more. Are you comfortable getting those outs or trying to get those outs and TJ Antone ain't getting any of them? This is where you put yourself when you cut corners on your bullpen. And it's not all on ownership in the front office. If Amir Garrett were better, you would look at him as a reliable option. The reality is he's not. If Michael Lorenzen was healthy, you would view him as a reliable option. Now, part of his health assumes that if he would have been healthy from the get-go, that he would have been in the bullpen, and all the work done during spring training was for him to be a starting pitcher. But there is no Raisel Iglesias, and there is no Archie Bradley, and right now in this bullpen, there's a whole bunch of Sean Doolittle and Art Warren and Heath Hembree and Brad Brock and Ashton Godot and dudes who, frankly, I don't want pitching in high-leverage situations. This is not David Bell's fault, and I do side with TJ Antone starting because at least the dude is guaranteed to get the ball every fifth day. He is their best option to be a starting pitcher. He's done it before. They kind of have him on a schedule here to start. I'm all for it, but it comes with consequences. Those consequences are going to be, at least in the short term, he can pitch in relief. So what do we make of all this? Our phone number today is 513-749-1360. Reds lose the game. Then there is the decision to take out Luis Castillo. I was having a conversation with somebody off air during the break. And look, man, Luis Castillo was really good today. That is a step in the right direction. His last two starts, he's been good. And you know, I'm not concerned about pitcher win-loss numbers, but, you know, to a degree, hard luck loser. David Bell did the right thing, taking him out of the game. 96 pitches, labor through the six, couple of walks, 10-pitch strikeout, rain delay in between. There's a lot of managers who in that situation would have turned things over to a fresh arm. And Lucas Sims is pretty reliable. The problem, though, is after Lucas Sims, if TJ Antone's not available, it's three innings worth of dudes who are not good. That's not David Bell's fault.
Hey, when you and your buddies are looking for a place to watch baseball this season, how about Longneck Sports Grill? Each location has 4K TVs all over the place, so you'll never miss a pitch. The menu is so extensive that you can get something different every time you visit, and no place in Northern Kentucky has a better beer selection. There are locations in Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood, and when the weather is warm, there's nothing better than a spring night on Longneck's outdoor patio. This baseball season, Longneck Sports Grill. Stay late. Come often.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
There's also the Jesse Winker thing. There's a good chance, excuse me, that you don't want to revisit this offseason anymore. But I can't help but to, because the Reds did something. Or I should say the Reds chose not to do something that is going to cost them a lot of money. I will explain coming up in just about 15 minutes. Plus, we have college football playoff expansion, which seems more likely than ever before. If you have not heard what the college football playoff, essentially their advisory committee, has recommended today, if you're a UC football fan, you are going to be elated. That coming up as well. But first, your reaction to this week and today at Great American Ballpark. In use today, 513-749-1360 is our phone number today. That is not the normal number. 513-749-1360. Your phone calls are next on ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station. After 5, this is ESPN 1530. I'm Mo. Mo Egger. I don't know why I just gave my first name. 7-2, the final score today at Great American Ballpark. Brewers beat the Reds. A three-game set against the Rockies opens tomorrow night, 22 after 5. At Mo Egger is how you can tweet me. The show today, 513-749-1360. That's the number you call. Zach, you're on ESPN 1530. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Mo. How about yourself?
I am well. What's up?
I mean, learning about, you know, Anto not being available and what you said about that meaning him kind of sliding into the rotation, I think that is more than likely the case. I mean, David has kind of been coy about his future rotation in the past, and I feel like an injury, I mean, you can't afford to not have an able body down there. So I feel like if it were an injury, they would have brought someone up to mitigate that. But, I mean, regardless, knowing that, I mean, I feel like today was – it's kind of a wash, right? I mean, poor David Bell. he has to sit there and watch what he thinks is the old Luis Castillo is back, and then down comes the rain, and he's probably like, well, I don't know what we're going to do now.
11 straight hitters retired. They have to put the tarp on the field.
I can't get Antone. You know, Sims has been great, especially recently. I love what he brings to the mound, too. But, you know, knowing that, poor Dad, I think this is pretty much what we're in for the season. We're going to score some runs. We're going to hang around. But this bullpen, I think if there were help, competent help, you know, within the organization, it would be here. Because looking at the lineup, looking at the, you know, starting rotation has been iffy. But this is a winning ball club with an average or, you know, maybe a little below average bullpen. I mean, if there were help down there, I feel like it would be here. What do you say? I'll hang up and listen, but what do you think they do to address this? I mean, this is assuming Antone is going to go to the rotation, but, you know, where do we go from here? If this team wants to win, what do you think it's going to take, you know, to add to the bullpen?
I think in the short term, thank you, Zach. I think in the short term, it's really curious that Philip Deal hasn't been given an opportunity. Because if you look at the minor league numbers this year, he has been nothing short of outstanding. That is kind of curious to me. Tony Santillan is down there as well. Is he a guy that you slide into the bullpen in the short term because you're trying to get innings from anybody? I just simply don't think that that's going to be Hunter Green, Nick Lodello. So it seems to me that it very likely could be. The strategy moving forward is you hope that Sonny Gray misses two starts. You try to make do with Antone starting once or twice on a spot basis. You hopefully inch towards Lorenzen coming back. You hope that Garrett starts to figure things out. You hope that Luis Castillo, the light bulb is on now, and when you give him the ball, you can count on six innings, if you will. And you hope you're in a position that by late July, you can make a move at the deadline. Now, there's a lot there. There's a lot there. I'm a big proponent. We talked about the Brewers being proactive with their shortstop situation and getting Willy Adames from the Tampa Bay Rays. You don't have to wait until the day of the deadline to make a deal. But it's also going to be very competitive. If I'm a team, I was reading the story in the Philadelphia Inquirer about Archie Bradley maybe being dealt by the Phillies, who they just got this offseason. And you go, okay, well, you know, who needs bullpen help? And the writer of the piece mentioned that there's anywhere from like 15 to 18 teams that would say right now we could use a guy like Archie Bradley, who is, you know, he missed about 5 weeks with an injury. He hasn't been that effective, but still. So if you're the Phillies, you're not taking the first deal thrown your way, right? You're going to create a bidding war. Now, is Archie Bradley the best reliever possibly available? I don't think he is. But if you're a team that has a reliever and you're willing to move on from them, first of all, are you sure your team's not going to be in contention, right? I mean, that to me is the part of this that we haven't talked about nearly as much. Are we, like, in Cincinnati, we're still trying to figure out, are these guys going to be buyers or sellers? Now, in Arizona, they know. In Colorado, they know. In Pittsburgh, they know. And the Pirates actually have a reliever in Richie Rodriguez that I think would a lot of teams would really like. But how many teams are still trying to figure out whether or not they're going to be in this hunt or not? Especially now around the country that the gates are being open. And probably a handful know right now what they aren't. Orioles know they're not in contention. The Tigers know they're not in contention. Probably the Texas Rangers. But I'm sure there's a handful of teams. The Anaheim Angels would be one. The Washington Nationals would be one. Maybe the Miami Marlins are one. You know, you could put the Reds in this category that really haven't completely determined either way whether they're in it or out of it. So there's that. Like, I think it's hard to just say, well, go and trade for a reliever. Number one, how many teams have decided they're sellers? And of the teams that have decided they're sellers, how many of them are just going to take the first offer? So between now and when you can make a deal, what can you do? It starts, I guess, with Luis Castillo's better. Now, when you give him the ball every fifth day, at least we're not going to have to go to the bullpen in the fourth inning. Maybe you don't completely feel that way now, but it does kind of start with better starting pitching. They got a great outing last night from Vladimir Gutierrez. Part of the Antone thing that I think is going to be interesting is if he is starting, how long can he go? But I think a lot of it is you're just simply hoping some of these guys pitch better. You hope Sean Doolittle, who has a big league track record, pitches better. You hope that Amir Garrett, who has a big league track record, pitches better. I find it hard to believe that they're going to turn things over to Hunter Green or Nick Lodello. I do wonder why Philip Deal can't get a shot. I do think Michael Lorenzen stands a very good chance of giving them a boost, but that's still a few weeks away. And in the short term, moving Antone to the starting rotation, which I am not at all opposed to, it does leave you with basically right now one reliable arm in the bullpen. It's tough. When you cut into your own depth, this is an easy thing to do last year. Now, you know, last year when Antone had to start, nobody really knew what he was. But you could take him out of the bullpen and go, God, we still have Raisel Iglesias and an effective Amir Garrett and Michael Lorenzen. And then, you know, they got Archie Bradley around the deadline, August 31st last year. And Lucas Sims pitched himself into a really nice role last season. They had a lot of options to withstand a guy being ineffective for a while, or a guy needing to change roles, or even a guy or two having a poor outing. You could make a decision like the one that David Bell made today, two on, two out, one run game, sixth inning. And it's not about using your only reliable arm. You could use any number of guys. It's a long answer to a short question, isn't it? 29 after 5, we'll chat with Scott. We'll tell you what the College Football Playoff Committee did today, which is great if you're a UC fan. And, you know, we all want the Reds to pay Jesse Winker, right? Good. Where were you 6 months ago? Next, ESPN 1530.
The Cincinnati Bengals play here. ESPN 1530.
Sports updates in service of Kelsey Chevrolet, home of lifetime powertrain protection and guaranteed credit approval from their family to yours for life. KelseyChev.com. Reds lose 7-2 today to the Milwaukee Brewers at Great American Ballpark. Luis Castillo, 5 2/3, one hit baseball. Unfortunately, bullpen imploded. Joey Votto went yard, his first homer since coming off the injury list. Career dinger, number 301. Jesse Winker drove in a run. Rockies here tomorrow. First of three. TJ Antone deemed not available today. David Bell did not say why. He says he'll elaborate on why tomorrow. Speculation obviously includes the possibility of Antone starting in the spot vacated by the injured Sonny Gray. 26 away from six. By the way, our phone number today is 513-749-1360. What do we think the odds are on the normal phone number being back tomorrow? We called, legitimately this happened, I'm not making this up, we called Cincinnati Bell today and said, like, our phone doesn't work. And the person at Cincinnati Bell said, we have no record of 749-1530 ever having been used. I don't know if that was used before I started working here. But when Bob Braun was on 1530 playing Rosemary Clooney and Dean Martin, to call and make a request to him in like 1998 was 749-1530. So that phone number has been used for at least 23 years. And I'm guessing way, 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 way back beyond that. No record of 749-1530 ever being used. That is a good, healthy sign. So today we are using our buddies at Fox Sports 1360, that entire crew over there. We're using their phone number, 513-749-1360. Scott from Dayton, you're on ESPN 1530. How are you?
You know, it's funny when you call the number, it says it's been disconnected.
Disconnected, yeah. Great. That's fantastic. It just keeps getting better.
I'm really genuinely concerned about iHeart and about 700 WLW. I told... and now I draw a blank on his name. Taryn. I told Taryn they played yesterday's pregame show for the Reds game today.
What?
The whole thing.
That happened?
The whole
thing. They played yesterday's pregame show?
Yes.
Like what part? Like the locally produced part or the network part?
The interview with
Bell,
with, David Bell, and then Dave
Armbruster,
talking about who the starters were, and then talking about Brady Anderson, I told Darren, I thought that was fairly embarrassing.
You know, as somebody who has been in the position of whoever the producer of the game was today, I can empathize. So I'm not going to make fun because God knows I've made similar sort of mistakes before.
Yeah, well, you think, it's a half an hour show. You think somebody would have caught that. But again, I digress. So in terms of not being right, but getting it right. We had this discussion the other day, and I know I got you fired up, and I understand that. But you understand we're talking about the same two pitchers, and I don't mean Iglesias and I don't mean Archie Bradley. I'm talking about the same two pitchers that every ball club is looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And for you, for people, and I'm not singling out you because everybody's doing it, to hold the Reds brass responsible because they couldn't find pitchers number 13 or 12 and 13.
Did they try?
They brought in Sean Doolittle.
And got him on the cheap right toward the end of the offseason.
Well, I get it, but what are you... What do you expect? Look, the California Angels have had the best player on the planet for how many years?
About a decade.
And how many have they times has that team won?
Mike Trout has played in 3 postseason games.
Yeah. So I guess my point is I'm not absolving them, but I think it's a little harsh to go after them because they didn't get pitchers number 12 and 13 right.
But they it's not 12 and 13. It's like numbers 2 and 3 out of the bullpen or 3 and 4 out of the bullpen.
Well, they had a plan.
Sean Doolittle stunk last year.
Well, I know. And
you know who didn't stink last year? Raisel Iglesias.
Yeah, but he does stink this year.
No, he doesn't.
He's got a 4.35.
He's had 2 bad outings.
Yeah. In today's bullpen, I think we'd take a 4.35.
Would you take Raisel Iglesias right now instead of Heath course. Hembree or Sean Doolittle or any of these other dudes we've watched out there?
But again, it gets back to the plan. The plan was they thought Lucas Sims and Amir Garrett, that was a nice right-lefty combo.
Yeah. No, it's not all on them. I mean, look, they've had guys that they could count on underperform. By the way, Raisel Iglesias, since May the 8th, has an ERA of 129. Dudes are hitting .163 against him. He has 22 strikeouts and 14 innings.
I get it. And again, we talked about this. They were trying to save some money. I get it because they did do a spending spree last year. They did open a pocketbook. They did buy a bunch of free agents.
Yeah.
And so I understand the philosophy of, hey, we have these bullpenners that we think are going to be good. We can do away with the high price.
Like they gave those guys away. It's one thing if you want to use those guys and pivot towards younger assets or minor leaguers or prospects or somebody who plays another position. It gave Raisel Iglesias and Archie Bradley away.
Yeah.
Gave those guys away. That's not acceptable. And look, that is it their fault that Amir Garrett has been ineffective this year? No, that's on Amir Garrett. Is it their fault that Michael Lorenzen has been injured? Of course not. But when those things do happen, and inevitably during the course of a season, you will have a guy who has a bad year or has a bad stretch, or you will have a guy who gets injured, that's when the fact that you compromised your own depth comes to the forefront. And so there to me is, all right, you had a guy who's underperforming. It happens. You have a guy who got hurt. It happens. But now you have this big gaping void because you chose to give 2 guys away.
Right.
But plus you add on top of that, they never really addressed the shortstop position. They gave away their other catcher. I mean, they just unloaded dudes, and they weren't aggressive in addressing their weaknesses. And it's not just the bullpen either.
No, you're right. They didn't. Again, they thought they had the shortstop with Suarez. Moose playing
but
third.
Suarez isn't a shortstop.
He has played shortstop.
He's played shortstop. And look, I give him a credit to a degree for abandoning the plan because he couldn't play the position. There's
right.
a reason why he doesn't play shortstop. I mean, if all this time Eugenio Suarez showed the capabilities of playing shortstop at the big league level, he would have been playing shortstop this entire time. And the Suarez thing was the results of all their other plans not working. Let's try
right.
D. Strange Gordon. No. Let's try this Kyle Holder dude. No. Let's try Kyle Farmer. That didn't work. They gave Jose Garcia a chance, which I didn't really object to, but, you know, that didn't work out. It wasn't like they settled on a Eugenio Suarez only because everything else failed and really only because Jonathan India surprised a lot of people this spring.
Right. No, that's true. I mean, all of those things are true. I guess I'm just willing to be a little more forgiving because the team hasn't performed the way they should have, the way they counted on would happen.
Sure.
If Amir Garrett was lights out, if Lucas Sims was lights out, if Anton was performing the way he should, Doolittle was performing the way the back of his card was, we wouldn't be talking about the bullpen. But I think it's maybe a combination. Maybe that's
sure.
Fair.
Look, the reason why this team is still below 500 is not the result of any one thing. But
right.
to me, on the level of things that you can forgive, a guy having a poor year or a guy having a bad couple of months, that's part of the game. That's going to happen, right? That happens all the time.
Yeah.
Giving players away is not forgivable. Giving guys away is not something that I can just nod my head and go, I get it. A guy having a poor season who's giving it his best effort, I can handle that. That's part of sports. A player getting injured and you having to overcome his absence, that's part of sports. Giving away high-end guys and replacing them with guys who aren't as good is not something that I find acceptable.
I know you're short on time, but in today's economy, in today's world of contracts, that's where I'm a little forgiving, because it's being done all over the place. There are being good guys cut because their contracts.
Yeah, but I don't want to be like everybody else. I want to win the World Series. I want the Reds to win the World Series. This was a chance while everybody zigged, they could zag.
Fair enough.
All right, Scott. I always enjoy it, man.
All right, thanks.
Thanks. I mean, look, this is, if you look at the issues of the bullpen, it is undeniable. I will be the first to admit, in March, Tony Pike and I sat down and we were doing like preseason superlatives, and I said, the guy that I think is most likely to make an All-Star team, and every team obviously gets one guy, the most likely guy on the Reds for me is Amir Garrett. That clearly wasn't the case. We all went into the season thinking, at the very least, no matter what they did, you can count on Amir Garrett. He has performed poorly this year. There is no getting around that. That's part of sports. Guys are going to have bad years sometimes. Guys are going to have bad performances sometimes. That is forgivable. You can't forgive it if, you know, the dude's not trying his best, that sort of thing. But that's just part of the game. Michael Lorenzen got hurt. Hate for him that it happened. Hate for the team that it happened. That's part of sports. Giving away talent. Sean Doolittle stunk last year. Sean Doolittle is probably past his prime. He's 34 years old. Has he had a very good career? Yeah. Made a couple of All-Star games, has a World Series ring. But Sean Doolittle has had a very good career. But you effectively gave away, in their prime, relievers, one of whom had a very good year last year. And by the way, Raisel Iglesias has been lights out. Here's the way his season has unfolded. He's had three outings this year in which he gave up multiple runs. That's it. Aside from that, he's been money. Look at what Raisel Iglesias has done in the last calendar month. Look at those numbers. I'll read them to you. Opposing hitters hitting .163. He's pitched 14 innings. He's struck out 22 guys. He's walked four. Guys have gotten on base at a .226 clip. Would you like to have him in your bullpen right now? Raise your hand. Would you like to have that? Instead, we got Sean Doolittle, who we like because he likes Star Wars. That's what I heard about Sean Doolittle this offseason. Hey, not very good, but he likes Star Wars, Mo. Oh, cool. Dude was last effective like 4 years ago, but cool. Yeah, great. That to me is not supposed to be a part of the game here. A guy having a down year, it happens, man. Happens in every sport, happens with every team. Giving away talent, giving it away. That is not forgivable, man. And I know I bring it up almost every single day. That is not forgivable. Raisel Iglesias was given away for a dude that didn't even make the team. Archie Bradley was non-tendered, and the Phillies signed him for $6 million. Literally just let him go. Got nothing in return. And this side, look, everybody's dealing with a crappy economy in baseball. I do. I don't want the Reds to be like everybody else. You know who wasn't like everybody else this offseason? The San Diego Padres, who are currently 10 games above .500, have one of the brightest three or four stars in the sport, and are a bona fide World Series contender. Now, they're in a great division race with San Francisco and L.A. 10 above .500, and that includes the fact that they've lost the last couple of games. Hell, do this. The Reds, before last season, before the pandemic, they got a ton of credit around the country. Did they go and sign the biggest names in the sport? No. Mike Moustakas is not a bona fide superstar that's transcendent. Nick Castellanos hasn't been either. Wade Miley's not. Shogo Akiyama certainly isn't. Why did the Reds get a lot of credit? Hell, you can even go back the year before when they acquired Yasiel Puig. They got a lot of credit because in this game where seemingly nobody is trying, they tried. And I remember at the time going, yeah, look, I'm glad the Reds got these guys, but we're giving this team credit for trying to win. That's where we are in this sport. Where the one team that tries to win gets credit. They should get credit for trying to win. So this has been a thing in the sport for a while, since before COVID, where everybody chooses to sit out. I don't want the Reds to be like everybody else. If you're a Reds fan, you shouldn't want the Reds to be like everybody else. You should want them to be different than everybody else. The fact that everybody else decided to bail this offseason is not an excuse for giving away talent. They did that this offseason. The players have been good enough to keep them relevant. This team is extraordinarily likable. Extraordinarily likable. There's not a dude on that team who's sort of off-putting. There's not a turd in the bowl. This is a team that I think is really easy to root for. Jesse Winker, Nick Castellanos, Eugenio Suarez, Joey Votto, Jonathan India, Shogo Akiyama, who doesn't play nearly enough. Like, there's TJ Antone himself. Like, there's some guys that I think are really easy to root for. They play hard, and they offensively, they've gotten so much better. It's to the players' credit that they have kept this season from cratering. But they were not equipped by management. And that is almost tragic in sports terms. 11 away from 6, this is ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station. Shall we find out what happened to TJ Antone? We will talk about what the Reds did not do this offseason, not with their bullpen, but with Jesse Winker. Reds didn't, like, re-up any of their dudes long-term. That might have been a mistake. Also, perhaps more on the college football playoff. Their working committee has recommended a 12-team playoff, which I love this setup. This is great for, I think, most college football fans. It's great for UC fans. 12-team model, top six conference champions, six at-large teams, top four conference champions get byes. By the way, Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic reports that what we've sort of interpreted here, where Notre Dame has no chance for a first-round bye, is true. And by the way, one of the people on the working committee is the AD at Notre Dame. Tony Pike and I will talk about this tomorrow at noon on Cincy 360, so I'm looking forward to that as well. How much time do we have? 1 minute. Ace in North Carolina, you could have that 1 minute go.
Hey, Mo, it's Ace.
Hi, Ace. What's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call again. My son Jackson's sitting right next to me. Can you just tell him what we talked about?
Tell me what you talked about, Jackson.
Come on, tell him. Please, just say it. Come on, we got to talk right now. We got 1 minute.
I want the banana phone.
Tell him.
And the red.
Amelia, tell him.
I love the reds and the banana phone.
Jackson, how old are you?
How old are you? Tell him.
Six.
Six? Amelia, tell him how old you are. Hurry up.
Seven.
Seven.
Eight.
Eight?
My daughter.
Oh, well, very good. Everybody in the house, they're all big Reds fans?
Huge.
Huge?
Eight. All right. Yeah, she'll be 8 on Monday.
Oh, hey, what's her name?
Amelia.
Amelia, happy birthday. Early happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
What are you going to get for your birthday?
Listen, what are you going to get?
I hope a slime bucket.
A what?
A bucket of slime.
A bucket of slime?
Slime.
Oh,
slime.
Very good. I do. All right, well, happy birthday, Ace, to your daughter. Thanks so much.
Right. Thanks, Mo.
There you go. You got it. All right, we're done. Back at it tomorrow with Tony at noon and then here at 3:05. Have a great evening. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Taryn for producing. This is ESPN 1530 Cincinnati Sports Station.
This baseball season, catch every game at Long Neck Sports Grill. There are three locations in Northern Kentucky, Wilder, Hebron, and Richwood. Each one of them very easy to get to. Each one of them has 4K TVs all over the place, and the sound will be on. Plus, no place in Northern Kentucky has better wings, and there's also no more extensive beer selection than the one you'll find at Long Neck's. Long Neck Sports Grill, and by the way, when the weather gets warm, there's nothing like Long Neck's patio. Long Neck Sports Grill, stay late. Come often.